Hi there. This is John Mahalik, the pastor of Union Christian Church. I am re-recording a sermon that I delivered live. We have issues from time to time at our church. This time we had some technical problems with the live recording, so I'm going to re-record a preview of next week's. You will have half of recording that's live and half that's re-recorded as we had a power outage. So this happens from time to time. So this is week two of a three-week series I'm doing in the summer on entering God's rest. Last week we talked about the premise of Sabbath rest in the Bible. What does Sabbath rest mean exactly in the Old Testament? And talked about the idea that Christians, even though we are not under the Mosaic Law, Hebrews chapter 4 does talk about us entering into God's rest. We don't have to follow the exact strictures or the rules of Sabbath rest as the Israelites did, but we are supposed to enter into His rest. The inspiration for the series simply came about in the fact that we are in summertime, and during the summer, many people, even though we have different schedules in Honduras as opposed to the U.S., we'll go on vacation, and we spend all year long thinking about that vacation time, the time to get away, the time to have some rest. But unfortunately, we don't always get the rest that we want for different reasons. I just returned from a couple of weeks of vacation in the U.S. and did have some time of rest, but I would say maybe 3 out of my 14 days were very restful. We don't always get the things done that we want to when it comes to the objective of restoration and rest when we go on vacation. And just some of the, at least if you're from the United States, you can think of the older days when you were a kid. I think of the days, for me, were in the 1970s, where we would go on these long vacations as a family. And my dad would take us to all sorts of different places, and the old cliche is he was going to take us to see the largest ball of twine or whatever it was. The image of vacation that we all see on these long family road trips is the family that's just so happy to go and to be there. But too often it becomes, in reality, something where the wife and the kids are cranky, and the dad is sort of this drill sergeant or this general kind of charging ahead to get to the next destination. And my dad was like that in a lot of ways when we were kids. The U.S. is very big, and we would travel, you know, hundreds and hundreds of miles, sometimes in a day, to get somewhere. And while my wife and I don't have kids, I will admit that I have carried on some of that as well, that I really care about getting to that destination, and I don't really want to stop other than maybe for gasoline and brief bathroom breaks to get there. And so it's not exactly this restful thing when we think about some of those family vacations that we went on. It always seemed as a kid or somebody in the car when you weren't the driver that there was, you were always going and never really stopping. And if you're not familiar with the United States, I'm not sure whether this exists, for instance, in Central America. In the United States, there were these just, again, long freeways or interstates that you would be on, and you would be in between towns or cities, but they would have these things called rest areas or rest stops that you could pull right off the highway, the interstate, and just stop with your car, go to the restroom. There would be vending machines, often trees, picnic tables, where you could, you know, stop for a while and just restore yourself on the road, on your journey. And so the premise that we've talked about last week is that so many of us are driven. We have all this work, whether it's in the home, whether it's ministry, whether it's in our job or whatever, throughout the week or throughout our lives, and the work never seems to end. the need never seems to end. And so in the same way that my dad or me or whoever, we feel like we have to get there, we have the deadline, we have the objective that we have to reach, we don't want to stop. And so the idea of Sabbath rest is stopping. That's really the definition from the Hebrew of rest in Genesis and elsewhere. It's not so much to rest because you're tired. It really literally means to stop or to cease what you're doing. And that's sort of the idea behind Sabbath rest. And again, I'll repeat Hebrews 4 that I talked about last time. It says, there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. And again, Hebrews is addressed to Christians. It says, there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For whoever has entered God's rest has also rested from his works, as God did from his. And then it says, let us therefore strive to enter that rest, so that no one may fall by the same sort of disobedience. So again, last week I kind of laid the groundwork for how we as Christians, while not under the law, are still expected to enter into God's rest. So I wanted to talk a little bit more and give some practical ideas of what does it mean to enter into God's rest, meaning to stop along the road of whatever our journey is, to cease and to rest in God. In Deuteronomy 12, there's another example, as we saw, for God's people, we had the introduction of the Sabbath rest in Genesis, but it wasn't really introduced practically for the Israelites until they reached the wilderness wandering. And we talked about that last week. But here's another passage for the people that were in the wilderness concerning entering into God's rest. It's Deuteronomy chapter 12, verses 10 through 12. It says, when you cross the Jordan and live in the land which the Lord your God is giving you to inherit. So they were in the wilderness. They had to spend 40 years, but then eventually they're going to cross into God's promised land. So when you do this, and God gives you rest from all your enemies around you so that you live in security, there you shall bring your burnt offerings and your sacrifices, and you shall rejoice before the Lord your God. This is an expectation of what godly rest would look like. Now, is godly rest about peace and maybe relaxation and restoration and all those things? Yes, it is. But here is a kind of a fuller example, maybe, of what godly rest looks like, at least for the Israelites, but I do also think for us as well. Godly rest wasn't just about a ceasing from activity. It was, again, the key words that are used here are about rest from all of your enemies and living in security, such that, not that you're going to necessarily have this and take a nap and not do anything, such that you can focus on God. You can offer your burnt offerings, your sacrifices, if you are a Jew, and rejoice before the Lord your God. So godly rest is really about stopping what you're doing, stopping the work that you do throughout the week or in your life, but really stopping your agenda in order to focus on God, to live in the security that allows you to focus on God. That's kind of a fuller example of godly rest. I'll quote Abraham Heschel, who I quoted last week. He wrote a book on the Sabbath. He's a Jew, but gives us some insight on godly rest. He says, rest means here much more than withdrawal from labor and exertion, more than freedom from toil, strain, or activity of any kind. Sabbath rest is a detachment from things, instruments, and practical affairs, as well as an attachment to the Spirit. So Sabbath rest is, as he describes it here, is a couple of things. It's detaching and attaching. Detaching from your agenda, from your work, from your focuses, and attaching to the things of God, which includes the works of God itself. So it's not just about resting from total activity, it's resting from what you're doing to what it is, God is doing. So in this message, I want to talk about these rest areas, pulling off to the side of the road, so to speak. And I want to put them under the category of detachment and attachment. So first of all, I want to spend some time in the category of detachment, detaching, separating yourself from your works, from that kind of thing. So again, there are a lot of things that we do in our week or our life where unintentionally we can commit idolatry. What's idolatry? It's putting anything above God. Okay, so we commit this unintentional idolatry, often with good things. Okay, so Matthew 6, 24 says this. Jesus is speaking and he says, "Nobody can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." Now, he is, in this immediate context, talking about money, talking about treasures and those types of things. But the greater context of Matthew 6, he's really talking about any material thing that pulls our attention away from God, we give loyalty to. It's an attachment. It's something that we are attached to while trying to at the same time be attached to God. And Jesus is saying when you kind of put those things on the same level, that doesn't work. You end up putting what is not of God above God. You commit idolatry. Richard Foster is a guy who wrote a number of books. He wrote A Celebration of Discipline. This was a class that we did last year into January and February, I think, in the church, the spiritual disciplines. And he says this. He says, "We are affected by the fractured and fragmented state of the modern world. We are trapped in a maze of competing attachments." And that's so true. Whether it, again, our week, our life, whether it's the lures of money, whether it's our schedule, our to-do list, whether it's our sleep schedule, our diet, whether it's taking kids to soccer practice, whether it's going to the doctor, whatever it is, these are all just kind of daily life things that often are put on the same level or above our attachment to God or things of the Spirit. And so our life is just pulled in so many different directions that it is virtually impossible for us to enter into godly rest. We are always on the freeway, the interstate, heading somewhere, and we are never able to stop. And so the word fractured and fragmented, those are good words that I want to apply here, because one way I want you to look at the idea of detachment is in one word that I would use called simplicity. And that's a word, that's one of the spiritual disciplines that Foster covers in his book that is scriptural. Simplicity. What is simplicity? It's taking your focus from many things down to a few things or to one thing. And so in this case, we want to put the one thing, God, above everything. The only way we can do that is to simplify our competing attachments. So there's nothing wrong with, you know, going to the doctor and the kids, the schedule, the diet, money. There's nothing wrong with those things. But when we are constantly pulled left and right such that we can't enter into godly rest, that's a problem. So we need to detach from these things in order to achieve that rest. And that is achieved in many ways by simplifying those things in our life. There's an example in Matthew 4 that we get from Jesus on attachment, and I'll go ahead and read it. Matthew 4, verses 2 through 4, it says, "After fasting 40 days and 40 nights, he, Jesus, was hungry. The tempter came to him and said, 'If you are the Son of God, tell these stones to become bread.' Jesus answered, 'It is written, man does not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God.'" Now, Jesus entering into the wilderness for these 40 days was in many ways emblematic of the 40 years that the Israelites spent in the wilderness. But Jesus, unlike many of the Israelites in the Old Testament, did it right. He behaved in the way that God really wanted the Israelites to. And that was, in many ways, by detaching from the things that might have controlled him or maybe tempted him to put above God. Things that he might need, like food, like bread. If you listened to last week, you heard that the context that the Sabbath rest was given to the Israelites was in the context of the manna that they were receiving, right? 6 days a week they would collect manna so that they could have food. God gave the manna. On the seventh day, they were to rest. They were to not go out and look for bread. Why? Because God was their provider and they needed to spend that seventh day focusing on that. So that was a test of faith. God provided a double portion on the sixth day so that they wouldn't have to collect on the seventh. And so the context of the Sabbath rest was, will you stop and recognize that God is your provider, that God completed the 6 days of creation, that God delivered you from Egypt? Will you stop and recognize that it is God who ultimately is the one who's going to care for you and feed you? And so when Jesus quoted this verse, he says from the Old Testament, he says, man does not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God. He had just spent 40 days detaching himself from things. So this scripture was actually very real for him experientially. He wasn't just quoting something arbitrarily. He had just lived it so that he actually believed it. But I think it took 40 days of detachment in order to attach himself to this truth that he really needed God above all things. So that is an example of detachment and attachment in a sense. 1 Corinthians 6, I quoted last time in another context, but I want you to kind of consider it a little bit differently. It says, Paul says, all things are lawful for me as a Christian under grace. And then he says, not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be dominated by anything. So in the context of rest areas or pursuing rest areas, he's talking about the fact that under grace, we aren't subjected to the Mosaic law. We have a level of freedom and liberty and grace, but we need to choose wisely. We need to detach from the things that dominate us. There's nothing wrong with all these things like that we just mentioned, you know, but when they dominate us, when they become our master, right? The illusion is that we can put them on the same level as God. We can't. When they become our master, that becomes a problem. So we need to enter into this discipline of simplifying our lives, of detaching from certain things in order to enter into God's rest. So again, kind of consider the word simplification. So I want to go through just a basic list of things that probably apply to all of us. But when I do this, I want you to understand that this list in many ways is subjective and sometimes based on the circumstances of your life. So this applies to all of us in many ways, but sometimes you're in a different season. Sometimes it's going to look different on how you would simplify your life or when you would simplify your life. So just think about that as you consider this list. So number one, look at your schedule. What is your schedule like? What are your priorities like in a given week, a given month, a given year? And is there anywhere in your schedule that you could look at where you realize you're just being dominated or mastered by your schedule, your weekly schedule, for instance? You know, so is there something in your schedule that you could choose to simplify, or many things? Could you simplify your entire schedule in order to detach, in order to attach? So again, we all have schedules, we all have deadlines, we all have needs and obligations, but there are things in our life that we can put down, we can detach from and put away in order to better be freed up to focus on God as our provider, that kind of thing. Now, this gets to the point that some of these things in our schedule, for instance, I could look at my next week and say there are things that I could actually detach from and put away in my schedule immediately. But in other ways, I need to look at my life and say, you know what, my schedule is the way it is right now. and I don't know that I can really pull away or change things. However, I could organize within myself or my family a game plan, a mission to, over time, simplify my schedule. And this, so that might take months, that might take years. Sometimes we really have to spend years simplifying our lives. My wife and I, as we go through this list, my wife and I have really spent a number of years looking at things like our schedule and saying, how can we simplify these things in order to focus more on God and what's important? So you got to consider that. You know, sometimes you're going to say, you know, that's right now I cannot change this. So you got to look at that yourself and make your own decisions. Related to schedule, our career, or if you're somebody who works in the home, you care for your kids, or maybe your ministry. Maybe that's your career, or that's part of your career. So in this category, the area of career, home life, ministry, what areas of this are just pulling me left and right so I can't rest in God, so I can't focus on God? Again, the ministry should be a godly thing. Certainly home life and career can be as well. But again, these are not bad things. But are these things that are just dominating me, that are running me ragged, that I can't focus? What areas can I simplify? What areas can I put away? Can I detach? Again, short-term, long-term. Some of this can be accomplished next week. Some of this might take a five-year plan. We don't necessarily know. Another category is the demands of people. The demands of people. Again, look at your week. How often in your week or your month or whatever are people pulling you left and right in your schedule, in the demands of where you have to be, why you have to be there, that kind of thing, the people that you need to please, these kinds of things. Again, sometimes this is absolutely justified. What I want you to understand is this is speaking about one particular extreme. Some people ignore people. Some people don't give any of their time appropriately to others. And that's a problem. But I'm not talking about that extreme. I'm talking about the people that are pulling you left and right unnecessarily. Are there certain relationships or people or obligations related to people that you can either put down temporarily or forever? Maybe the thing is that you think it's more important than it necessarily is, and it's certainly not more important than focusing on God as your provider, your creator. If it's keeping you from godly rest, what are some areas in the area of relationships or weekly obligations to people that you could put down? And another area that related to people is the way you think you need to appear before people. I think it's Foster. He talks about that we are live in a fragmented state when it comes to who we are, meaning we are someone to this person, we are someone to somebody else, and we are fragmented, right? We can't live a simple identity. And so what that gets a little bit deeper, but in what ways can we simplify who we are, that we are who we are to everyone? That is maybe a longer conversation, but that's something to think about when it comes to people. All right, another category is technology. This is a sacred cow for many of us. This is something that is very hard to sometimes talk about. Maybe people can get very defensive about it, but what is the promise of technology? The promise of technology so often is that it will make life easier, more convenient, and it will save us time. But so often that promise doesn't deliver. It's a false promise. For instance, how often have you spent working on fixing something or taking something into the shop or something like that has broken down? It's a piece, it's a car, it's a machine, it's a computer that you use to save time, but then you spend all this time trying to figure out how to fix it. And you're not saving time. You're maintaining this thing, you're fixing it. And so you're not really saving time. And then in the area of, for instance, social media, smartphones, are there pros to being on Facebook? Are there pros to social media? Are there conveniences that we receive by owning a smartphone? Absolutely. But sometimes, especially in the area of technology, we can commit what I would call the sin of distraction. I can spend an evening sometimes where I realize I have wasted 3 hours looking at silly, superficial things on Facebook or YouTube. You know, it's fun to be entertained and that kind of stuff, but that tends to add up over time. And so a lot of this is inventorying our lives. You know, what is the whole of my week look like? What does the whole of my life look like? Do I spend way more time distracted from what's important? Do I spend way more time not really living for what's important? And that is, you know, a general lesson in living for holiness and for what God wants, but it's also related to godly rest. If I'm constantly pulled towards the stuff that won't give me ultimate rest, then what am I doing? So what areas of technology can I put down? Can I detach from? Can I simplify? And that's where that word gets important. Maybe there's nothing wrong with technology, right? It can be very helpful. But can I simplify my life where I have less of technology in my life? And sometimes that gets into the area that inconvenience is not always such a bad thing. You know, there's something very healthy about putting down something, a piece of machinery that does the work for you and doing the work yourself. There's something great about slowing down and entering into life and, you know, that kind of thing. So that, again, very subjective. You have to look at your own life and determine how to make those decisions. I would also just mention that technology is something that gets into the idea of fasting. Part of detachment comes from fasting. Jesus fasted from eating food during that time in the wilderness. Could I spend a half a day or maybe a full Saturday without my smartphone or not getting on social media, that kind of thing? Again, it's not because it's evil in and of itself. It's because I need to detach myself in order to attach to God or the things that are more important. Another category that's related, I guess, to technology is the category of noise. So often the noise that's around us prevents us from entering into godly rest. I had to do an inventory of my own life when I was first introduced to this concept that I looked at my day and I realized that much of my day was not spent at any time in silence. I either had the TV on, a podcast, I had music, whatever, right? And I realized I didn't spend a lot of time at all in silence. And I had to ask why that was. Silence is very hard for some people, but in many ways it's an absolutely biblical thing to put away the noise in order to hear from God. Because God, you know, you've heard, speaks in a still small voice so often. How am I ever going to hear that if I'm always having noise around me? And related to that is the topic of human speech or speaking. And now I am more of an introvert, even though I have a vocation where I speak and teach. When I'm not doing this, I don't spend a lot of time in conversation or speaking. It's not something that really drives me. But there are other people who have the personality where they are energized, they are fulfilled by human talk. And whether it's them talking, whether it's being around others in conversation, and if they were to inventory their life, they would say that they don't spend a lot of time where they are either not speaking or they are not around others who are speaking. And again, nothing wrong with conversation. But if it's always me doing it, how am I ever going to hear the voice of God, right? Peter was corrected when they were on the Mount of Transfiguration. He was speaking at a time where he should be silent. There are other times in the Old Testament where it says, when we go before God, we need to be quiet. We need to be silent and we need to listen. So noise is a category that we could put down or we could detach or we could fast from. And then finally, other material attachments, whether it's food or shopping or money or whatever. So you have to do this inventory of your life. I don't know that it's always simultaneous, but again, godly rest is about detachment and attachment. We spend time trying to attach to God, serve Him as a master, without detaching from these things in our life that are also our master, that can dominate us. So we need to look at our life and say, what areas in the short term, the long term, in regular fasting, can I detach from in order to focus on God? Richard Foster says, the central point of simplicity or detachment is to seek the kingdom of God and the righteousness of His kingdom first, and then everything that's necessary will come into its proper order, right? Right? Put God first, His kingdom, His righteousness, all these things will be added unto you. This, again, we get defensive. We say, well, I need these things. Well, yes, you do. You do need to get there. You need to get to the destination. But God says, put them away. Stop. Rest. Put me first. And they will come into their proper order and not be something that takes away from what matters. Okay, so moving on to the area of attachment. So we need both of them. We got to detach and we need to attach to God. So some people will spend time simplifying their lives but not attached to God, and that is a problem. You can't do that because then it'll be just about you, really. So attachment is kind of the final way that step that we take to rest in God, the rest area that we can stop at. Psalm 131 is a great quote. It says, I do not occupy myself with things too great and too marvelous for me, but I have calmed and quieted my soul like a weaned child with its mother, like a weaned child is my soul within me. That's certainly a description of rest. It kind of talks about that thing we saw from Deuteronomy about rest from your enemies, security in God, celebration and joy like a small child. But again, we're not going to get there unless we first detach. But that's a great description of attachment to the Spirit, attachment to God. Again, we saw last time in Exodus 33:14, it says, my presence will go with you and I will give you rest. The ultimate rest that we can receive is as that weaned child with its mother in the presence of God Himself. That's a good description of attachment. So what are some rest areas that we can attach to God in? These are the things that you probably perhaps do or certainly basic things, but I want you to consider them within the context of godly Sabbath rest. One is personal or small group devotional time. So again, the Jews had to do the Sabbath every week, but there were times of prayer that they were also required to do. But do you spend regular time every week in personal devotional time? And this is you getting alone, again, detaching from noise, from people, from whatever, whether it's a half hour or an hour every day or several times a week with God. And how is that time spent? Attaching to God in things like prayer, attaching to God in biblical study, biblical meditation. I also would include other devotional books that are consistent with the Bible, written by other people. I'm often attached to God by spending time in those books on a regular basis. Again, these are rest areas. These are times where you stop what you're doing every morning or several times a week to get with God, to get with the Spirit. These are so important. And I also use the word small group devotional time. We need small groups as well. But what I would say is, if you are somebody that goes to small groups and doesn't spend any time alone with God, which Jesus did all the time, he spent a lot of time getting away from others in order to be alone with God, I would say that's a problem, because while small groups are absolutely vital, I think, to this process, if I were to choose one or the other, I would say you would probably need to choose personal time with God. It's scary sometimes to be alone, again, to shut the noise off and be with God, but that's important. But why are small groups important? Well, again, we might have personal time. We might go to church, even Sunday school, but there's no real good replacement to sitting in somebody's living room once a week for an hour or two with people that you are know or you're getting to know well, maybe 6 to 10 people, discussing the things of God, studying Scripture, praying together, hearing your needs, but ultimately focusing on God. That is a restful thing. So again, the rest isn't simply the absence of activity. This is attachment to God with other people or by yourself. That is actually extremely restorative. It's extremely restful to do these things. These are ways that we can attach to God. Psalm 1, verses 1 through 3 says this. It says, "Blessed is the man whose delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. He is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season, and whose leaf does not wither." So godly rest, when it comes to meditation or devotional time, prayer, etc., is godly rest is not, again, not just about not doing something. In this case, it's about being planted in God. and godly rest is also equated, as we saw in the Old Testament, to the fruit of the promised land, to being filled with the fruit of God, to being planted in God such that not due to your own works, you grow up in God, you bear fruit in its season, your leaf does not wither. That sense of provision that comes from God is something that we can equate to godly rest. And that's what you can get when you enter into the rest area of personal or small group devotional time. Another rest area, certainly, is a Sabbath day. Again, we are not, by the Old Testament standards as Christians, aren't required to honor a Sabbath day. However, as you probably understand, Sunday in the Christian tradition is the Lord's Day, the day of the resurrection. People go to church on Sunday and they spend time as a type of Sabbath day. You're living in Honduras, you know that Sunday kind of shuts down. And that's because people are honoring Sunday as a Sabbath day. Now, what day you choose doesn't necessarily matter. I would say that while going to church is absolutely a part of this process, this is part of attaching to God, it is restful to go to church to find this sanctuary, not just the sanctuary of the temple or the church, but the sanctuary of rest and having peace and joy with God and God's people, hearing God's word, worshiping, finding rest in worship, rest in things like the Lord's Supper and communion. These are restful things. However, in the modern world, if you're like me, Sunday isn't always exactly restful, not in the way that it was really meant to be in the Sabbath context. So often, you know, you get up early, you get the kids ready, you put on some nice clothes, you rush to get to church, you go to church, you go out to lunch maybe, and then maybe you spend a half hour taking a nap, and then you spend the afternoon and evening getting ready for the work week. Sunday isn't that restful. So one thing that I have done, again, you can kind of get creative in this. My wife and I have kind of combined the weekend. We know that Sunday has an element of rest to it by going to church and spending time with people. But Saturday, we will often kind of do more of the quiet stuff, maybe taking a hike or whatever, and really kind of combining Saturday and Sunday to achieve maybe what Sabbath rest should look like. But again, this is about not ignoring the cycles of creation. We have night, we have day, we have work, we have rest. And that's why every seventh day there was a time of rest. So whatever that looks like in a given week, you should set aside more than maybe just a half hour each day to honor God in a Sabbath day type of rest. And then even more, the cycle of not just the weekly cycle, but the monthly, yearly cycle, plan your year so that you are going on things like retreats or conferences so that you can get away, detach from your regular life in order to attach to God. So that's what retreats really can do for you, conferences, those kinds of things. I'm going to wait for this plane to go by. So spending time with, you know, getting away, detaching from your normal life, and attaching to God, that's what a retreat or a conference can often accomplish. There are some very busy conferences. You don't necessarily want to make that your only type of retreat. So again, time where you have structured time, not just to lay on a hammock, but to, you know, get also to attach to the things of the Spirit, attach to God, you know. Not just a vacation, but a retreat, a time maybe once or twice a year at least that you can go away alone, you can go away with your family, that time to attach to God. That's a type of Sabbath rest or a rest area. And then I would say purposely restful vacations. there are vacations, as I said, that are not restful, but you can plan in advance a vacation that is restful, that can be restful in God, and of course that ties into the idea of taking a retreat. Another rest area is the area of reconnection. And I talked about my wife and I going on hikes maybe on a Saturday. It's important for us to reconnect and remove the filters between us and God. In nature, God's creation is a way for us to do that. Not all of us live in the city, but most of us spend much of our week or our time living around man-made things, buildings, street, concrete, whatever. If you do not, on a regular basis, get out and have direct access to trees, mountains, trails, water, whatever it is, animals, you're going to miss out on an axis of worship that you don't have otherwise. And that doesn't mean that the tree is God himself or the whatever is God, but God created the tree, you know, and so God created the material that provides concrete or a computer or a building. But again, you understand, you have more firsthand access to who God is himself, to the nature of God, because God himself created the tree and the trail and the water. So spend time, you know, put into your schedule regular time where you have access to nature. That is, for me, is a time where I am able to worship God in a very special way. Now, another one that we can reconnect to is people. Before, I talked about the problem of people, where people are pulling us left and right, but too often, too many of us spend times where we are not really having attachments to people that could be described as sacred. And what I mean is, ask yourself, when was the last time you had a real conversation with somebody, where you sat down, there was no real time limit, where you were face to face, and you had a real healthy, long-term maybe conversation that was mutually beneficial? So often, whether it's, again, social media, we feel like we're connecting, whether it's our work or whatever, we feel like we're connecting with others, but we're not really connecting. Again, this is a way of reconnecting with people in a very real way, removing the filters of daily life and that kind of thing, and spending one-on-one time with our family, friends, other people. And I would also kind of add that to that, the idea of service. When I serve others, you know, not just maybe in my job, but maybe I volunteer at church or for a nonprofit organization, charity, that kind of immediately puts myself in the place of putting down what I want in order to focus on somebody else. So in many ways, that's a sacred thing. And it can be, and you can turn it on its head, I suppose. But service is another way that we can reattach to people, and so these are activities. This is a type of work, but this can be a godly work. And being a godly work, this can be an area of rest. Now, I would get to the idea that a rest area is actual physical rest. We need to remember that we are integrated beings. We are body, soul, mind, spirit. right? They all kind of work together. And we don't want to get so holy by focusing on things that we think are religious or whatever, that we forget the fact that our physical bodies contribute to our spirituality. And if we were spending our week or our year never really getting enough rest, never really getting to the place where if we get more than 3 to 5 hours of sleep a night, that's a problem, because again, that affects our material life, but ultimately it takes away from the possibility of having godly rest. So physical rest is a way to reattach to God and focus on God Himself. Now again, this might apply to seasons. You know, if you're a mother of a young child, or a father of a young child, you're going to say, "Yeah, that's not going to happen for a number of years." So it depends. But others of us can say, "You know what? I could change my schedule and I could focus on getting more rest so that my whole life can be better." And then related to the idea that we're integrated beings, I would also say that diet and exercise or another rest area. Again, if I am eating just stuff that is pulling me down, that I am tired all the time, that I don't feel well, and I'm not exercising, that contributes to my lack of focus or application to godly rest. We are integrated beings. So yes, these are material steps that we can take, eating well and exercising, but they contribute to the fact that we are, again, that food or lack of exercise become my master. And again, you cannot serve two masters. And then finally, as a category, a rest area in sort of the physical world is recreation and celebration. If you remember and you study from Scripture, the Sabbath wasn't just this serious, you know, sacred time where you didn't do anything fun. For instance, if you listened to the first week, the Sabbath was weekly. There were Sabbath years, and then every 50 years there was the year of Jubilee. And the year of Jubilee was a Sabbath year. It was a time of godly rest, but it was a time of celebration. It was a time of stopping and recognizing in celebration God's provision, God's creation, God's care for His people. So simple acts of recreation and celebration in your daily schedule, your yearly schedule, whatever, can be a very holy thing if they contribute to you enjoying life, recognizing God as your creator. If you don't have that in your schedule and you're wondering why you can't celebrate God, that might be a reason. So family game nights, you know, church game nights, whatever it is, getting away, having fun, that kind of thing can contribute to godly rest. So in conclusion, again, think about that old family vacation, if you were in the car like I was as a child. The road before you seems so long, right? When are we going to get there? When will we be there? And again, your life is so driven by that deadline, by that goal. And we are driven, and we never think that we can ever stop. But once you stop, you realize that stopping is a way for us to contribute to the goal. By stopping, we are restored. By stopping at the rest area, we can pause, we can regroup, and get to our destination, maybe not as quickly as we want to, but in a way that is more productive, more healthy, and certainly more godly. God gives us these rest areas, these opportunities, and we have to inventory our lives. We have to detach from things. We have to attach to things in order to enter into those rest areas. But the beauty of stopping, the beauty of ceasing and entering into God's rest is such a wonderful thing. So let me close with Psalm 92, the beginning of Psalm 92. It calls itself a song of the Sabbath. And it says, "It is good to give thanks to the Lord, to sing praises to your name, O Most High, to declare your steadfast love in the morning and your faithfulness by night, to the music of the lute and the harp and the melody of the lyre. For you, O Lord, have made me glad by your work. At the works of your hands, I sing for joy. How great are your works, O Lord. So I don't think it's an accident that this is called a song of the Sabbath. Because again, what is the Sabbath? The Sabbath is stopping what I'm doing to focus on the work of God. We focus and we praise God for who He is, for what He's done in the act of creation, right? And for the Israelites and the act of delivering them from Egypt. We stop along our journey and we focus on God. We stop our works in order to focus on His works. That's so often the best way that we can achieve the life that we've wanted. The life that we've wanted is ultimately sustained and energized and accomplished by our Creator and our Provider. When we stop along the road and pause at these rest areas, we can enter into God's Sabbath rest in a way that we would never be able to do according to our own standards, our own works, our own agenda. So consider this as an opportunity to inventory your life, to put these things into practice, and to see the fact that you can, as a Christian, live in God's Sabbath rest by entering in to these rest areas. Amen.